Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
Hello, Monday. This is Penn Jillette here in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is actually a studio right off New York City. Talking to you all from the Slammer, my home in Las Vegas, and sitting across from Michael Goudeau. We're on Free FM, 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. PennRadio.com. I got a whole list of stuff on the computer screen that I want to talk about. You know, John Lennon, the seances tonight. And who's coming in? Garrett? Garrett's coming in.
He's in his car. I hope he can't hear us.
Garrett's coming in, and he's going to be here tomorrow. He is the sacrificial lamb, so yes, to speak, who is going to watch this Lennon thing, which I just read a description of how it went. They've already got it all taped, and they've got some John Lennon talking that's been hidden in the, what is it called, EVA or something?
EVP.
EVP, Electronic Voice Phenomena. American Association. They have the EVP.
Sandra Bellinger, the lady who claims that Lacey Peterson and Chandra Levy are hanging out together in Heaven's Playground. She spoke to them.
I guess when you're famous, you hang out no matter where you are, even after death. But they got a little bit of John Lennon stuff. Despite widespread belief, this is from, what the hell is this from? I just read stuff at random.
Hand you things and you read them.
Read them. Could be anything. You could just type this up. Bullwinkle is a, not that message. Despite widespread belief in EVP, scientists have shown about as much interest in the phenomenon as they have in John Oates' reverse speech theory, and probably for the same reason. We already understand priming and the power of suggestion. As Alcock says, the simplest explanation for EVP is that the product of our own wonderfully complex brain, aided by strong emotional desire to make contact with the dead. So they got some EVP on John Lennon, and tonight Dagwood will watch the...
Garrett?
Garrett will watch the show. So you don't have to. Do not watch the John Lennon thing tonight. I don't want any – I mean, if you're going to watch it anyway, fine, but I don't want anybody to, like, hear about it on my show and then watch it because I would feel terribly, terribly guilty. It is not condoned by any of the Beatles estates, any of the Beatle people. Yoko Ono has been totally against it. There was a great quote from, I think, Yoko Ono's manager or something who said John Lennon would not – be involved in a pay-per-view special, no matter what. John Lennon, if he were going to come back, would have major network coverage. It wouldn't be pay-per-view. But we have one person who's going to watch it, and we don't know where he's driving in from San Diego, right?
Yeah. He's got a long drive ahead of him.
And he can't, in a hotel, they won't have pay-per-view.
They won't have pay-per-view.
So you're trying to finagle him to come over to my house.
That's the plan.
So we will have my pregnant wife, Emily, alone in the house with a person
with a stranger,
that you've never met, you know nothing about, who's coming into the home. Are you going to come over here, Happy Jack?
Jack is volunteering.
Yeah. Someone should be over here with a gun. Maybe a couple guns. Want to be fully strapped. Because, you know, that Lennon EVPs can make you nuts. He might just go wacky. He might just go nuts. Yeah.
You also might want to stop your wife from killing him.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you'll get the spirit of Mark.
Right. He'll go, wow, it's an EVP, and she'll jump on him and pound him to mud.
Yeah, he has, yeah. It could be all of a sudden the EVP becomes that of Mark David Chapman. Excuse me, Mrs. Gillette. I don't know. John Lennon's last words, you know, it hurts. It really hurts. Those are his last words. Yeah. You should have last words ready because you're not going to. I mean, John Lennon was a brilliant lyricist. Those aren't the best. I guess it's probably the primal scream thing. Anyway, we're not going to talk a lot about John Lennon now because tomorrow, Monkey Tuesday, we'll be talking mostly about John Lennon.
That's right.
Lots of stuff in the news I want to talk about, but I can't get this out of my head. And I don't want to go on some big atheist jag. You know, I'm not going to talk about, you know, there's this Kurt Cameron thing. I couldn't watch it. It's like a half-hour thing. But if you go into Google and search Cameron Banana Intelligent Design. Cameron Banana Intelligent Design. Now, I don't know who the hell Kurt Cameron is. He was a child star or something?
Child actor.
And Growing Pains. He was on Growing Pains, about a year. And he's now this hardcore Christian. And what he does, and I find...
And an amazing scientist.
I find this really offensive no matter which side does it. I subscribe to a lot of skeptic magazines, you know, and I'm very involved in the skeptic movement. And by skeptic, it's got this negative connotation, but the actual thing a skeptic is simply pro-science, you know. And about every 2 or 3 months in one of these magazines, they run articles on how to argue. How to argue with a UFO guy, you know, yeah. How to argue with someone who believes in ESP, how to argue. And it really offends me. And I don't want to talk about when People for Intelligent Design do it, because you should police your own group, okay? And I just want to say to skeptics, don't develop a strategy for how to deal with people who disagree with you. The idea is to simply talk and argue and speak from the heart. And if they say something and you think that's a really idiotic thing to say, just say it. Calling someone an idiot shows them respect. When I say stupid stuff, my friends say, shut up, you retarded idiot. And then they explain to me what's so stupid about what I said. All these articles just go, no, never say that's a stupid idea. Never say any of that. Say, what do you think could be another explanation for a UFO? Idiot. But they don't have the idiot at the end. They just don't say it. And there's a condescension. Whenever you are manipulative of another person, I was talking to a guy from MIT who's a hardcore skeptic, you know, and he was saying, how can we convert more people to skepticism? And I said, that's not the issue. The issue is try to tell the truth. And the problem I have, I love religious people who speak their mind honestly. Jesus is the only way you can be saved. You're going to go to hell. That's really good. As opposed to someone who does that condescending thing like, have you ever thought how the eye came about? Of course I've thought about that, and I've read the books on it. I understand. So Kurt Cameron has these courses in how to convert an atheist, a course on how to convert the atheist. Of course, how you convert the atheist is very simply money and sex, and then the atheist will turn. Oh, you want me to go to church? Sure. Sexual favor and $500, I'm there. You know, that's a cool, but he has this whole thing. And one of the arguments, and if you do this search, and I'm sure Dustin will have it up on our website, you know, of some of you are hearing this in podcast or time shifted, we'll be able to find it very quickly, because Dustin will have it up. But there is a YouTube or something, one of those things, YouTube, yeah, or something. There's it's a 30-minute how to convert an atheist thing. And he has this thing about a banana. And that ties in with Monkey Tuesday. And so we'll talk about it more on Tuesday. But
now we're talking about Lennon tomorrow.
But Lennon was one of the monkeys, wasn't he? Oh, no, he was the Beatles. I'm sorry. He talks about a banana. The proof of intelligent design is a banana. And he holds this banana up, you know, and he then shows that it has 3 ridges on the top and 2 ridges on the bottom. And then he shows his hand having 3 ridges on the top and 2 ridges on the bottom. You know, what is this called? The inside of your knuckle, the phalanx or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Has that. And then it peels down perfectly with a flip top.
And hangs aesthetically over your fingers, I believe.
He says hangs
aesthetically.
And then he says it is also the tip is in the shape of your mouth.
It's
and then
pointed he makes at this, your face when yeah, you're holding
he
it.
Points, he really does say all this. Now, we're not making up any of this, you know. Go and find that thing. And he talks about it, and then he eats a little bit of banana. And it struck us that his whole argument for intelligent design is that the banana was designed perfectly for people to eat.
Yes.
Like the chicken.
Yes. Exactly.
And when you're hungry, a chicken walks right in. He walks, takes off all of his feathers, walks into the microwave, cooks himself up, and comes out with a little bit of teriyaki sauce on him. I mean, there is one food that is pretty easy to eat, and that is the banana. There are millions that don't. And
somebody points out, you know, the steak is exactly the right size for a plate.
Steak fits really well. Yeah. But you should see this Kurt Cameron thing. We'll talk about it more. But what I really want to do is I want to get back to his arguments are not, this is what I believe, this is what's true, and this is how I can prove it. His arguments are, this is the way you at home can convince an atheist. And they even have this stuff like how to go into chat rooms and
yeah, the cut and paste.
Control
and paste
the responses. Conversation, control the argument. I get an idea. Why don't you tell the goddamn truth? Whatever, however you see it, just tell it. And I am not speaking now that Christians should not try to convert. Of course you should try to convert. If you believe it's the truth, you should go and preach it, talk it, push it. but don't condescend. Don't try to manipulate. Just tell the truth. I am all for all the dialogues between all people. You know, we had the big AIDS walk yesterday.
Yeah.
And a woman came by. She came all the way from Chicago to meet us
one
and talk to Happy Jack, one of the fans of this show. And it meant so much to me that she came all the way from Chicago for the AIDS walk that I didn't even remember her name. That's how much it meant to me. But, no, it was really it was a great thing. And she was on the AIDS walk. We had hundreds and hundreds of people. And Moxie, my 11-month-old daughter, started out the whole walk. I held her in front, and she walked. We walked far. It was stupid how far we walked. It was like a couple miles or something.
It's not one of those things where people are given a certain amount per mile. I don't know why we didn't do a 30-yard dash straight to the Peppermill.
But they raised a lot of money, and they almost brought us down because, you know, the first year they raised, like, our team raised $3,000. So we, like, doubled it. Boom, easy. Boom, Pennatel. Oh, yeah, we'll give you money. Oh, yeah, we care about AIDS. Oh, yeah, we're hip. And then yesterday was up over $17,000. And Teller and I had said in all the press that we were going to match it. So I went up on stage and said, yes, we'll match it. Now the Penn and Teller team is giving $35,000. Fortunately, no one holds you to that crazy stuff you say on stage. So we're not going to give a penny. Yeah, screw them. No, of course, we'll come through with the money, or at least Teller will. Teller's very good to his word. That's why he doesn't talk. we did it. And also, I had my little tape recorder with me. Not a tape recorder. That shows it off. It was a Victrola pen. You had your Victrola with you. Was it your Edison?
Big wax ball.
The big wax ball I had there. And I had I was trying to record, you know, people.
Right.
I talked to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, you know, which is this great group that dresses like nuns, very heavy gay group that does all this cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, although they make fun of all the religious stuff and all the trappings, they do nothing but good. They, like, raise money for organizations. They were there doing that. And I want to say that this AFAN thing that we did is just to help people who are sick. There's no political agenda whatsoever. People who have AIDS in Nevada get money, meals on wheels, stuff like that, stuff they need.
Housing.
And there was a woman, there was a woman there that was holding up a sign and screaming about Jesus and so on. And I went over trying to stir something up. We recorded this, and I'm not going to play it. It's just not interesting. because it was a non-issue.
She won.
She did.
She won that round.
She won completely. I mean, I have no problem with it. She was standing up saying, Jesus causes all sin. Jesus deals out sin. Repent, and Jesus will cure all illness. Jesus will cure all disease. So I went over to her, and I said, listen, are you protesting the AIDS march? And she said, no. I said, do you think that we shouldn't help people who are sick? And she said, I don't think that at all. She said, I just think there's a different way to help people, and it's through Jesus. So I went, okay. You know, the other years, we had people that were really screaming, like, you know, death to all gays and stuff, and not in those words. But this year, it was very cool. It was a really great,
it was
a beautiful day. It was really nice. People were out walking. And the only complaint I have about the whole day, a lot of dogs. You know, I don't like dogs. It was just maggoty with dogs, just crawling with dogs. And I had Moxie. I carried her most of the way. And then I had her, I put her in her stroller. And if you've got a dog and there's a stroller around, try to keep your dog in the leash a little ways away. I didn't like the dogs being that close to Moxie's
face. Right at the right height, aren't they?
Right at the right height to just attack. And I think that my paternal instincts would be fast enough that the dog moved in the direction of Moxie. Although I hate to touch a dog. So maybe it's better. You know, we could always have another kid, but touching a dog, yuck. I just think that if you've got a dog, be aware that even though your dog may seem friendly, new parents, especially, you know, older parents who are having their first kid and don't have that cavalier attitude toward babies, you know, that people that have had a lot of kids.
Went through a lot of trouble, had a lot of money spent to have a baby.
Yeah. This baby cost money.
It's not
money.
About love. It was just as expensive.
This was IVF.
It's like a nice
We're
car,
talking
you
tens
know?
Of thousands of dollars, sure. You know, it's like key in my Benz, which I mean, not that I have a Mercedes-Benz. I have a Mini. I have three Minis. But that's not important to the story. Keep your dog on a leash that there's like, you know, 6 feet, not because the dog would hurt the baby. We all know that your dog would never bite anybody. Your dog just loves people. Your
those
dog
other
is just
people's
terrific.
Dogs.
But just because the person may not know your dog as intimately yuck, as you do. So they may be nervous. So I was pushing the stroller, kind of going, and I was talking to you about it. I was kind of going, I wish those dogs were further away. And then you slow down, and they slow down, and you speed up. And then at the end of the thing, some people were carrying their dogs because the dogs were too lazy to walk all the way across. If you get a dog and it's too lazy to do an AIDS walk, I don't know. Speaking of sheep, there's this organization. Where the hell is this? This is in...
somewhere where there are sheep.
The Netherlands, throughout the Netherlands. Happy Jack, I want you to get on this. There's an advertiser who has an ad for some hotel, I guess it is. Yeah, there's hotel ads. And they've put them on these waterproof blankets that are worn by sheep. See, the sheep have all this wool. And then we shear it off, and we put a blanket on them to keep them warm. Sheep in northern Netherlands wear waterproof blankets unwittingly. This is the New York Times.
Unwittingly.
Unwittingly doing their bit to create outdoor advertising for a hotel website. And, of course, the New York Times is too cool to say what hotel website it is. And I can't find it in the article, I would tell you. It's not any sort of ethics on my part. It's just the inability to read quickly while I'm talking. Hotel.nl is what it is. I guess NL is Netherlands or something. And this is the great quote. Okay, this is Bert Cooper. I don't know how to pronounce Netherlands names, which is, you know, not surprising because I usually can't pronounce American names. This is a quote. This is about, there's sheep. There's like 1,000 sheep, and they're all wearing these blankets that have the name for a hotel on them. And Happy Jack, get right on it, because these sheep need to have at least one blanket that says freefmpenradio.com, okay? It's like, what is it? It's like $1.23 a day. So $1.23 a day, we can have a sheep running around the Netherlands that says freefmpenradio.com, okay?
Maybe we should open the company to do this in the U.S.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Just
Jack, get on that instead.
Rip
Take
off.
Over.
Yeah.
Let's just rip off those Netherland ideas.
And here's the quote of the guy. This is what I mean. This is what makes me crazy about big governments trying to control everything. My first reaction was a smile. It is very creative, said Bert, blah, 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 the town mayor. My second reaction is that we have to stop this. If we start with sheep, then next it's the cows and the horses. Man is clearly talking about his sex life. It's a slippery slope from sheep to horses, is his point. What the hell is the harm of having sheep wearing blankets that have advertising on it? Some people think advertising is just evil, right? Is that the whole idea?
I guess. Well, you know what my idea was? I thought that the blanket was a little overkill. I thought, you know, we could hold the sheep down and just spray paint free FM on the side of it and let it go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what
save us think. A fortune.
You have
wouldn't
so,
cost us a buck a day.
You always have so close to good ideas.
So close.
Okay,
it?
Let me put it this way: the sheep has had his wool sheared.
Yes,
he is cold. They need to put a blanket on him. So you stencil the name on the sheep and then cover it with a blanket. Okay. So what have you accomplished besides the fun of holding down a sheep and painting on it? What have you accomplished
other than the whole fun of holding down the sheep and painting him? Well,
nothing, I say.
We live in a warmer place than the Netherlands, I suspect. And I don't think the sheep here wear that many blankets. I don't see sheep in blankets.
I don't see sheep at all. There are no sheep in Nevada. When have you seen a sheep here?
There are sheep here.
Where?
Out by my house.
Okay. You know that I'll never drive up by your
That's
house.
That's right.
So it's a very, very safe lie. We got so
you
much more to talk about.
Each,
I want to talk about, what's that?
$10 each, I'll go spray paint free FM on them. You just give me the cash first.
Look into that, Happy Jack, because I don't trust Goudeau any further than I can throw a sheep. We'll be back talking about Mick Jagger and George W. Bush. Might talk about lawnmowers. Who knows what we might talk about here on Free FM, 866-313-FREE. We might take some calls, too. PennRadio.com. You can read about it all. Read all about it on the sheep. This is Netherlands Sheep Monday here. Someone wrote in and suggested that. Netherlands Sheep Monday here with Penn Jillette on Free FM. 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. If you want to call in and talk about really anything. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. Happy Jack came in during the break and suggested that if they're going to put blankets on sheep, why don't we have advertising on homeless people? You know, homeless people need blankets. And he, I think, thought that would set off a whole, like, shtick, and we'd be, like, you know, funny and talk radio controversial,
yeah,
making fun of homeless people. And then they'd be like, you know, we'd get press, you know, like, right, Penn bashes homeless people. you know. There's no such thing as bad press. Lee Harvey Oswald said that. But, you know, I was thinking.
We said, yeah, okay.
sure.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah, it didn't seem that funny to me. But not because it's in bad taste, but because it seems like an okay idea. I mean, you don't want to have blankets on homeless people that say eat at Joe's, you know. But I don't see why some company like Nike that has that swoosh, and all they care about is putting that swoosh everywhere, right? They don't even need to say Nike. It's just a swoosh. Why doesn't Nike, like, you know, take an advertising hunk in a city, like, you know, $100,000, and get a bunch of, like, you know, blankets made that have the swoosh all over it and give them out to homeless people? What's the downside of that? There's something really down about
this. The downside is that homeless people are generally invisible. People don't look at them.
I guess so. They
hurt their eyes.
And also, I guess it is patronizing and condescending. But I don't know which is more important, I don't know, respect or actual help. I mean, is it okay to humiliate someone if you're helping them? I sure hope the answer is yes. That would clear up a lot of stuff. A lot of news, you know, that's that weird podcast. Osama bin Laden railed against those who wage war against Islam, calling for heretics and atheists to be killed, and along with his brother, answered questions about explosive devices in a new segment called Bomb Talk. See, Osama bin Laden couldn't do Monkey Tuesday. He could not do Monkey Tuesday. There'll be other Monkey Tuesdays. I know a lot of people are writing in, heartbroken, that tomorrow we're going to be talking about John Lennon and coming back from the dead.
And a lot of good monkey stories.
I know. We have a ton of good.
Monkey stories.
There will be another Monkey Tuesday, believe me. We even Jonesy's even got a theme song for Monkey Tuesday. It will not be tomorrow, but there will be in the future another Monkey. You can't, you know, that's the thing they found out. It's that reinforcement. Non-consistent reinforcement, intermittent reinforcement, mm-hmm, is actually much more powerful for humans than constant. If you give people a choice between putting money in a slot machine and getting a certain return every time or a certain thing, or having it in a pattern, it's much less satisfying than not knowing when it will be. There's a really interesting thing that intermittent reinforcement teaches people better than constant reinforcement. In other words, not knowing when you're going to get the reward is actually a strong part of marking it.
But I don't think teaching is the word you're looking for there, because they're still gambling. If it was teaching, you would go, this only happens intermittently. I should stop.
No, that's not true. But teaching children.
The reward is positive.
The reward being intermittent is actually a more powerful reinforcement. At least I've heard that. A more powerful reinforcement than a constant.
Let's test it. You have a 9-month-old baby.
She's actually 11 months old.
Oh.
Okay. She took 5 steps, too. She took 5 steps. At first, for me, she took 3 steps because she's a real big Skynyrd fan. But then now she's up to 5 steps. And I'm hoping she'll only walk in the prime numbers.
I thought I was hoping for 12 steps.
My daughter will never do the 12 steps.
Okay.
She'll go right from 11 to 13. Keep it prime. But the intermittent reinforcement. So Monkey Tuesday will not be every Tuesday. You'll listen every Tuesday. You might get Monkey Tuesday. You might not. You won't know in advance. We're just going to parcel out Monkey Tuesday when it seems right. Another piece of news here I wanted to get to that you'll like. An agreement between the Department of Health and Human Services and Homeland Security would allow the CDC to quarantine anyone who looks sick with bird flu. Anyone looks sick with bird flu, they can quarantine them. For an example of someone who looks sick with bird flu, every CDC employee and customs agent will carry a wallet-sized photo of Steve Buscemi. They'll just have that. Anyone that looks like Steve Buscemi, just lock him up. He looks like he is so sick with bird flu. Iranian women will be allowed to attend soccer matches for the first time since 1979.
This is good news.
Yes. However, they're still banned from taking part in the deadly fan rioting. One step at a time, sisters. Once we'll get you there. Soon, you'll be rioting. First, you can go to the soccer games. Later, you can riot. There's another great story. Do I have that somewhere? Did I give that to
Which
you? The Mick Jagger story?
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's really funny.
There you go.
This is Mick Jagger. This is the way he protests the war, okay? The Rolling Stones paid out 3,600 pounds, which I don't know, what's that, like $5,000 a night for a suite in Austria, okay? It's the luxury royal suite at the five-star Imperial Hotel in Vienna, okay? They got that suite for June when the Stones are scheduled to play a gig in Vienna. And now there's a summit meeting in Vienna at the same time, and the Bush aides and the Secret Service wanted to book the same suite because this is the suite that they always use for White House officials. I mean, Reagan has stayed there, Kennedy stayed there, and George Bush Sr., they've all stayed when they were in office. Mick Jagger will not give up the royal suite because he's against the war.
That man is taking a stand.
He sure is. He sure is.
Mick.
And Mick has booked every one of the suites of that room. And White House officials want to reserve the suite and all the other rooms on the first floor. But Mick and the Stones already have it. This is the quote from Mick's guy. Bush's people seemed to be under the impression that they would just hand over the suites, but there was no way Mick was going to do that. So Mick Jagger is against the war, and his way of protesting is to not give Bush a $5,000 a night suite in a Vienna hotel. Because, you know, Bush is going to say that and just go, maybe I better rethink this whole position.
I think it's hitting him where it hurts.
Hit him where he lives.
That's right.
It's where he lives.
That's...
He lives in a $5,000 a night suite. Hit him where he
lives.
He's
going to stay at the Motel 6 now.
And while he's there, while you're there, young man, at the Motel 6, you think seriously about what you've done in Iraq. I mean, it's just amazing. But, you know, Neil Young has got this other album coming out, Impeach the President and Living in a Time of War, and he's putting it out streaming. I mean, Neil is amazing. I mean, I'm not sure, because I'm friends with Christopher Hitchens and because I have some Middle Eastern friends who have fatwas on their ass, you know, for being, what's it called, apostate? Is that right?
Rotten. Rotten is the word you're looking for.
Rotten. No, though, they've left Islam and given up that faith to become atheists. So they have, you know, there's a jihad on them. You know, they'll be killed. And because of that, I'm not sure that I'm totally against the war. I'm certainly not for it. I don't know. I am wishy-washy. I am riddled with problems about this. I have no idea. If I were president, I have no idea what to do. Except I would get that goddamn suite away
Mick
from
Jagger.
Mick Jagger.
I would be checking his taxes. But, you know, which is going to hurt the president more? The small room or the album by Neil Young? Which one's going to bug him? One of those is really going to bug him.
Yeah, not having the room might bug him more than the Neil Young album.
It is.
I don't know. Neil Young, you know, regardless, this is what I'm talking about. You know, I want to make a decision. By the time the war in Iraq is over, I want to know how I felt about it. And that's why the marketplace of ideas, the Free FM idea, is so great. Because then Neil Young registers what he thinks about it. You know, I'm really eager to hear that record when it comes out. Record. That Edison record. Cylinder when it comes out. I'm very interested in streaming that audio when it hits, because Neil Young is really
Someone sent us a link to bumvertising.com.
What, really? There is
someone's,
one?
Someone's it could be a hoax, but someone's already doing it.
Uh-huh.
Pokerfacebook.com is advertising on homeless people.
How are they advertising on?
Well, you know how you have that little sign that says, you know, need money
food.
Now? There's a little thing that attaches to the bottom of it that says pokerfacebook.com. In this picture.
And they get money for it?
Apparently, they in addition to their begging revenues, they're picking up a little extra cash.
Yeah, I guess, but the policing that and stuff is tough. I just think something that's useful that a charity organization could have. I'm just crazy, right? This is just a nutty, bad idea. Another very bad
Gillette
idea. Earmuffs, something like that? I don't know.
Gloves, yeah, something like that.
What blankets that said Free FM that homeless people were wrapped up in? The reason we know it's a hoax is that it says bum advertising, right?
Bumvertising,
they would never
yeah.
use the word bum. They would use the word homeless.
I would assume so.
And they would also have the word humanitarian or compassion in there somewhere. You know, compassionate humanitarian swoosh for Nike on homelesspeople.com. That would be what it would be actually be called. I made that up pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I should sell this to Nike, you know. I could use a blanket. What was... This is Penn Jillette, 866-313-3733. Tomorrow will not be Monkey Tuesday, but you never know. We'll be back right after this. PennRadio.com. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette. This is not a Monkey Tuesday. I was talking about intermittent reward and punishment. A person named Heath wrote in and said that Sun Tzu, T-Z-U,
Yeah.
Sun Tzu, that's that real military Chinese. There's all these writings, you know, on the art of war and stuff. He's one of those guys. He said that the most effective way to break the will of a soldier was to offer intermittent reward and punishment without any pattern of dispersal. He was speaking, of course, of Monkey Tuesday that is there to break the will of all radio listeners. So the same action that one day got you promoted to squad leader for a day on another day had you cleaning the mess. So that's what I was getting. Although I think there's also stuff that isn't just the rantings of a warlord, but actually there's psychological studies and so on, which I think the psychological studies are probably less scientific than the rantings of a warlord. But what do I know?
A lot of people wrote in to say the bumvertising is real.
Bumvertising is real?
That's what they're claiming.
Maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. I just think any way you help people is good. I also have this real belief in the, you know, capitalism and the free market system. And it seems like there should be some way that, you know, a company could say, we take care of the homeless, we care about people, and do something like that. I don't know about things on the sign that say, you know, we'll work for food, God bless you, you know, smoke camels. I don't know if that. Did I just break some sort of law by saying smoke camels?
No, you're talking about the actual animals.
I was saying smoking camels would be a really, really good thing. This is a letter I'm going to read, just way off the subject of advertising on homeless people. Hi, Penn and Mike. This is from Jennifer. I watched this show on the History Channel last night about Houdini. As you know, Teller was in it, and Penn too at the end. Well, I was wondering if you knew why they had Teller sitting in the dark when he was talking. It was kind of strange that they had his name on the screen, but he's in the dark. Like, we don't know who he is. Laughing out loud. Plus, they did show his face a couple times, just not while he was talking. Just wondering whose idea that was. Well, I think it was mine. I think that incredibly stupid idea was mine. See, Teller, we've been getting a lot of calls and letters on Teller not talking. And because I've answered it so much in other shows, I wasn't going to do it. But since we got a very nice, polite email from Jennifer saying that my idea was stupid, I thought I would explain a little bit. Now, Teller not talking was not an idea that I had anything to do with. Teller worked his way through college performing magic at frat parties. And I forgot what exact ring of Dante's Hell that is. But it's fairly close to the center, magic at frat parties. And he found that if he shut up and did really macabre things, like one of the tricks he did way back then, that he still occasionally does in our show, not often, but to throw it in, is he would swallow 100 needles, 6 feet of thread, and then bring the needles up threaded, which is a trick that Houdini did. Houdini used many fewer needles, and Houdini also ripped it off from, not ripped it off, but got the idea from fakirs in India. It was an Indian magic trick. And they would do a horse hair and like 10 needles. And Teller did with 100 needles and thread. And he would work silently and found out that the frat boys would get sick of heckling him if he didn't heckle back and just did this stuff. So we first worked together, Teller and I. We were two separate acts on the same bill. And we had to keep the integrity of both acts. Now, I'd worked tough environments, too. I hitchhiked all over the country. I would work bars, juggling, and essentially doing comedy. And I was just louder and more aggressive than anyone in the audience. And we got both booked in this Minnesota show, the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. And we wanted to do an act together, but we needed to keep the integrity of the two separate acts so we could use the solo material. So Teller had to work silent. But we decided that we would never, ever insult the intelligence of our audience and act like Teller really couldn't talk. So we try to always be kind of with a wink about it. So Teller always talks. In every Penn and Teller show, Teller does talk. But there's always a joke on it, you know. Either he talks off mic to me quietly, you know, jerk, shut up, something like that. Or he'll talk with there's
something like that.
Usually exactly that all the time.
Paraphrasing here.
Shut up. Shut up is always part of it. Shut up.
That's a very good Deller impersonation, actually.
Well, shut up. And or he'll talk, like, during when he throws the rabbit into the chipper shredder in the show. He's talking that whole time, but there's the din of the engine over it. So Teller really wanted to do this Houdini thing, because Teller is probably one of the top magic historians. He's like a very big cheese, huge cheese. He's like the big Swiss in the magic group. You know, Lance, too.
Yeah.
You know, Lance and Teller are big cheese.
And they're
cheese.
On all of those shows, too. You always talk to Lance. You always talk to Teller.
Always. And they always, you know, I don't talk because Penn doesn't know anything about this. Oh, Houdini, wasn't he a Jew? That's yeah. That's all they get from me. Oh, yeah, Jew, right? Eric Weiss, Jew. From Budapest, right? Jew. That's all they get from me. So they have Teller on. And we don't want to make a big deal out of Teller talking, and yet we didn't know what to do. So in this show, what we decided to do, and I say we, I don't know whose idea it was. Could have been Crasher's, could have been Teller's, could have been mine. But we all okayed it, so we're all fully responsible. Was the idea was to shoot him backlit, you know, or frontlit, or whatever that is. So you couldn't see his face in darkness.
Like a news program.
Like a news program, like he was a mob guy. Because we thought that would be a funny thing to do, and apparently Jennifer didn't think it was funny.
Well, maybe it was too subtle.
She thought it was, no, not too subtle, too stupid. Too stupid. I mean, that's the thing. You know, that's the whole thing. When you set off your life in comedy, there's funny and stupid and a very thin line between them. Very thin line.
It's very hard for us to tell the difference.
We can't tell the difference. We have no goddamn idea what's funny and what's stupid. It's clearly we don't know.
I think my suggestions fall on the stupid side. And yours are on the funny, right?
Well,
I believe historically.
As long as my name's on the show, that's exactly true. Yes. As long as it's Penn Jillette's show with sidekick Gabby Hayes. Played by Michael Goudeau, as long as you're Chester, as long as you're walking with a limp and going, yeah, Marshall Penn. Now I'm doing references. I'm doing references that were from before I was born. That's how topical the references are. It's like I'm talking to Gilbert here. So, and then Jennifer goes on. Jennifer claims to be this huge fan and says really kind things. And then she has these scalpel-like incisions into my heart of, you know, you stupid hypocrite, what kind of things you do with your life. So Teller doesn't talk after the show. You know, when you come and see the Penn and Teller show, after the show, we're out in the lobby hanging out with people because we never stop doing that. People will ask us, you know, why do you hang out with people after the show? And the reason is we played in San Francisco where you saw us at the Phoenix Theater, which is now, I think, a Thai restaurant on Broadway.
Yeah, there were only 40 seats or something.
Yeah, there was no dressing rooms, yeah. You know. So after the show, we'd walk out and you'd be standing there and the people would be out there. And then our career went up so in really easy increments. We never jumped from, like, you know, 40 people to 40,000. You know, we played a 40-seat theater, then a 75-seat theater, then a 100-seat theater, then a 150-seat
theater. We got
the
idea.
Okay, then a 300-seat theater, then a 450-seat theater.
Yes.
We're finally up to a 1,400-seat theater, but it doesn't make
what's
any
next?
Different. Probably 1,500-seat theater. And so we still stand out the same way we always did, you know. And Teller talks to everybody there. He'll talk to anybody about anything. You know, and whenever we do a lecture thing at like MIT or Oxford or something, Teller always talks on that.
MIT or Oxford?
Those are the
Did
two.
You say you're doing lectures at MIT and Oxford?
We have done.
Is
those
that
are the two
crazy?
Places we have.
Really?
That's not crazy. That's true.
Who's booking that?
Who's booking
you think
it
I can
MIT?
Work one of those?
Yeah.
They need some comedy juggling at MIT
yeah,
and Oxford.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
Okay.
I was just thinking about that because 10 years ago today, we were at Oxford and we were talking to them. We were
in England.
Yeah, in England.
That Oxford?
That Oxford.
Not
that
the
Oxford.
Shoes? You weren't doing a lecture to Oxford shoes?
No, and I know what I'm doing because I write every morning. I write stuff, you know, and then I read what I wrote 10 years ago and what I wrote a year ago. So I always know what I was doing 10 years ago, and I always know what I was doing a year ago. And 10 years ago, I was in Oxford. But 10 years ago and 2 weeks ago, you were getting on my nerves. I have a note that says your giggle is driving me insane. And I went out and had lunch with you and said, he's a really great guy, but that goddamn giggle. It's like fingernails on chalkboard. Yeah. But now it's been endearing to me up until you did the whole thing about why would you be at MIT and Oxford and then started giggling, and then you got damn annoying again. Okay? Just so you know, everything repeats.
Every 10 years.
We're back to Jennifer. So Teller doesn't talk because Teller didn't talk back when he did the frat parties. Teller is very articulate, as you know, probably more articulate than me. And Teller is was a high school Latin and Greek teacher. He's a classic scholar. He gives history lectures to magic things and stuff.
So maybe Teller was lecturing at Oxford and you were hanging out.
I was hanging out.
That's what
I was clearly.
Okay.
And Teller will talk at all those things, and Teller talks all the time on those things. And we just thought that on the History Channel, it might be cool to do a mob thing type thing, you know, informer thing. But Jennifer didn't think it was funny. And then Jennifer goes on to say, bitch, I also...
Is that on there?
What's that? No. I didn't say anything. I also want to know if they participate every year, they being... being Penn and Teller. I also wanted to know if they participate every year in the seance to contact Houdini and why if they don't believe in that kind of stuff. We have been at the seance to contact Houdini several years. I guess one or two maybe. And we go there because it's a collection of people that really knew about Houdini. We got to meet Houdini's only living assistant. She's like 90 now, and she was 16 when she was Houdini's assistant on stage. And she's there, and Hardeen, who was Houdini's brother, his grandson was there, you know, who looks just like Houdini. And Marjorie, who was the
psychic
that he busted in Boston, and maybe didn't bust honestly. There's much speculation that he couldn't figure out how her tricks were done, so he slipped a reaching rod in to her little apparatus to make it look like that's the way she did it. But Marjorie's granddaughter was there, you know, and Marjorie's granddaughter looked just like the pictures of Marjorie, and Houdini's whatever would be great nephew, I guess,
right.
Looked just like Houdini. And you get to be there, and being at the seance to have an open mind to try to contact Houdini on Halloween is not saying he's going to show up. It's just saying we're open-minded. If he's going to, we'd like to be here. Of course, we are always hoping he will not show up, because if Houdini shows up at a seance with Penn and Teller, then our show, our whole career is gone. Bulls hit is off the air. It is just off the air. We're done. So we sit there hoping. They're all going, Houdini, if your spirit is with us, we're going, I hope. Don't come. Don't show up. Because if Houdini's spirit comes back from the dead, I have to completely change my whole paradigm.
A lot of
rethinking to do. And I'd be happy to do it. You know, finding out there's a life after death would be a pretty cool thing. I'd be happy to do it. But Houdini didn't come back. So that's why, Jennifer, I don't think that's hypocritical. I don't think it's hypocritical.
Well, that matches my theory of life. If Houdini does come back to life, you know, at a seance, do you want to say you were there? Or do you want to say, I heard Houdini came back to a seance?
Yeah, being there would be pretty cool, wouldn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, it's not a horrible thing. That's an okay thing.
That's why Lance and I went to that that show that we went to go see, what's his name?
Kreskin,
yeah. Well, I said to Lance,
that's
do
a
you
want to story.
Hear Penn beat up Kreskin, or do you want to say, I pulled Penn off of Kreskin? It's a better story.
It's a much better story, and it's a long story. Me going to see Kreskin is a long story.
It's a great day.
I've had a long feud with Kreskin since I was 12 years old. I have hated Kreskin. I hated Kreskin before it was cool to be country. Before it was cool to be country, I was disliking Kreskin intensely. I really don't like him. What's his name? George Kresge or something from Jersey?
I
do not like him one bit. So that's the letter from Jennifer. I'm going to start reading more Gmails on the air. I like reading them. So if you do want to write in, we'll read about it. We'll talk about it tomorrow. As we've said before, we're going to be ready to call if you want 866-313-FREE or write in Gmails penradio.com, because we're going to have Dexter here tomorrow.
Garrett.
And Garrett, he's coming in. And he's going to sit right here in the room with us, and he will have watched the Lennon seance, maybe at my house, and he will report back on everything that happened. So you do not need tonight, go out and have a good time. You do not need, he will be here with his guitar. He'll tell us everything that happened in the John Lennon thing. We're going to see you tomorrow. Remember, you never know when it's going to be Monkey Tuesday. And remember, if my thought dreams could be seen, they'd probably put my head into a guillotine. But it's all right, Ma. It's life and life only. Penn Jillette saying goodbye from Las Vegas.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.